This is football. I'm Kevin Clark. Why don't we cover it all? Nate Tice is here. We're going to start with a little bit of national championship quarterback draft talk. Put what these teams mean, all positions, not just quarterback, offense and defense, what this championship game, this playoff means about the upcoming NFL draft. We did not mean to go deep down that rabbit hole, but we did because I asked about Michael Penix and JJ McCarthy, and off to the races we went. Nate Tice is fantastic on all things. And then we actually talked about the thing we're here to talk about today, which is the all impressed me team. The guys who popped for us, whether they're superstars who kept it going, whether they're middling guys who saved their career. We name a bunch of guys. I really enjoyed this. Here's Nate.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, Nate Tice is here, old buddy of ours. You know him from the Athletic Football Show. You know him from Yahoo, where his columns are must-reads. What is going on, brother?
Not too much. That was a great preliminary discussion. I feel like most of our conversations have been recently, you know, off-air, have been our sons. We're son-dad brothers. Like
we're boy dads, which is I don't think a thing.
No, it's not.
We're in a robust group chat with Mina Kimes called Boy. What is it called? Boy Life or something?
Boy Life. I don't know.
Something
boy related.
And I didn't name it. And you didn't name it.
No, did not.
So somebody else named it.
Did not.
Solak, I think, will be joining Parent Corner here in a couple of months.
Yes.
That's something to watch. Solak, the dad. He's been making dad jokes for a long time. He has a lot of dad tendencies.
Easy transition.
So he'll fit right in. He'll probably be on the show shortly. Speaking of, you guys both like to watch college quarterbacks.
We do.
This national championship game on Monday. Michael Penix is what?
He is aggressive.
So, what would you do? Where do you feel comfortable? Two ACLs, the age. Yeah. He can move in the pocket, although JJ McCarthy's much better. His actual numbers are much better under pressure than Michael Penix's.
Yeah.
But what is he as a prospect if you're watching Monday night with an NFL lens?
That's what a lot of people are trying to determine. He came into the season thought of as like a day three guy and then has grown into a day two guy through sheer production and sheer what he's put on film. It's something you can't deny. Yes, you can say it's a very fun offensive system. How much of it translates is interesting because some throws do and some throws don't. He has many talented weapons, one for sure first rounder, a potential second, another day two guy.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, though, is that he has performed in the biggest moments against Oregon in the Pac-12 mm-hmm. championship game, now in the first game against Texas in the college football playoff, and all he's done is just put it up. Throw that ball in aggressive tight windows and make real aggressive throws that translate to the NFL. And that's what I think a lot of evaluators, including me, are trying to weigh do I weigh the first 20-ish games I've watched of this guy at Washington or these last couple of games, the four or five games? And I've heard the CJ Stroud comparisons with what he did against Georgia last year, but it's one of those where it's like, yeah, but that he showed stuff before that. So that's something we're trying to determine. To me, he is quarterback 4. And that is, if you asked me a month ago, he was quarterback 6. And I'd say just this performances that he's put up against the best defenses and making real throws and improving on stuff that I was hoping he would improve upon. Is it too little too late? I don't think so, because he's doing it now. So the offseason questions are going to be the age, going to be the injury stuff, and that will, it'll play out. But right now, I don't consider him a true first rounder, but I do consider him quarterback 4, which to me is more of a late second round grade that would get inflated. So
quarterback 3 is who?
Jaden Daniels. from LSU.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. That makes sense. But I just want to make sure, because we had Jordan Reed on the show a couple months ago. He was saying that J.J. McCarthy was going to get in the conversation.
He would definitely top four. Is. Yes.
Yeah, but I think he's probably dropped.
Yes. Yeah. It's just that I hope he goes back for another year, just because he has to put more out there. It's just that there's just not a lot of tape. They don't have to throw the ball with him. And so that's why you only can determine 12 plays a game that translate and that you're trying to come from. So he's just a very tough evaluation. And then Bo Nix is another one that's kind of in that kind of quarterback forward discussion, at least the general quarterback forward discussion. So that kind of three are going to really kind of be battling it out, it seems like.
I want to ask you a question you may not be equipped to answer. I love asking questions you're just not prepared for. You just get a totally half-baked answer. That's what's called being a good host. Look it up. journalism students of the world. It was interesting, and I've said this on a couple of shows this week. Washington, 0 5 stars. Alabama has more 5 stars than the entire Big Ten Conference. And normally, over the past, let's say, 150 years, that translates into NFL guys. Yeah. And the way Michigan has recruited has translated into some, but not a ton of NFL players. Just the way that, you know, just if you're not doing top five classes, you're not getting a steady stream of recruits. That's 150 years of data on that particular issue. Having said that, Michigan has, according to PFF's draft board, 15 guys who are going to be drafted this year, which is astounding.
Right.
And I'm curious, when you watch this Michigan team, they're doing what that's producing and developing, because everybody says, like, the number one cope in college is, when you get a two-star because you have a bad recruiter, everybody goes, oh yeah, we'll watch the tape and we'll develop these guys. And it's like, well, you know who else is going to develop them? Kirby and Nick, who have the best players in the country. They're also going to develop. Yes. But it seems like Michigan has some sort of secret sauce in development. I know the coaching advantage, obviously.
Yeah.
The coach borrowing scheme from the Ravens really helps.
Yes.
But I'm just curious, when you watch Michigan as what amounts to a special NFL factory, you're seeing what?
Well, a lot of the scheme does translate. You talked about the coaching and stuff. Obviously, Harbaugh's NFL background and everything, but they run real I formation runs. And like, yes, the NFL has gone away from I formation runs, but it hasn't fully gone away. So, but it's something, it's nice when you can see the day one, quote unquote, install plays, and you can go like, how does this guy do on this play that everybody runs, as opposed to just this wacky RPO that you only see in college over and over. And so I think it's that. I think Ben Herbert, their strength coach, is worth every dime. Only reason I could drop that name is he was the strength coach at Wisconsin when I was there. So I know that one. Like,
you do look a little doughy since leaving him.
So doughy.
You know. Same. He obviously worked a miracle.
Oh,
he obviously worked a little bit of a miracle.
It's like, hey, you got to start drinking Miller Lite. Busch Light's not doing it. but that's what it was. But no, I think the scheme stuff does. You just mentioned, it's a lot like the Ravens scheme. Okay, I get to watch this safety come down in this defense that I also run on Sunday if I'm a coach watching that. So it's easier for them to translate. They're taught in that way as well. They practice in that way. I think that's how they install plays. So I think these guys are kind of quote unquote trained to be more professional. And if they have some decently recruited guys, it's like they still have room to grow potentially too. So it's that nice balance. And when you win games, you got more eyeballs on you. And so maybe some guys get inflated as well. I think that's also a part of it too. But I think it's just the coaching comes down to it, and that translates the best.
Somebody in that orbit told me a great nugget, which is that NFL style pressures terrify college quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah.
It's the last thing they want to see. And so if you have some sliver of pro pressures in college and you can't run the same stuff, you can't disguise it like you can in the NFL when these guys are 29 years old and can throw everything on their plate. But if you just throw a little bit of a complicated pressure at them, offensive coordinators are going to be like, I rage quit. I give up. I'm not going to do this. And Michigan is capable of that because of the threshold in the coaching staff. There's coaching talent there.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. I thought the best performances from Monday were Penix and the Michigan defense coordinator. I thought those two had the best days. And I think that's why people rave about him and why he'll probably be a name that shoots up, Jesse Minter. And I think, no, but what you're talking about is something Jim Leonard's touched on and how he said it was kind of fun to be, you know, dialing up Rex Ryan blitzes in the Big Ten and, or just rushing four and keeping the running back in protection. Like I always come back to what Chip Kelly said when he got back into college, and he said, you know, the thing that struck me about the NFL, it's so situational. And now I think college has gotten way better at being that. There's definitely more merger between NFL and college, it feels like, as far as scheme wise. But I think that they I think that because of those blitz stuff, it's like not only just the quarterbacks, offensive lines. Look at Alabama trying to sort out anything that any game, any simulator creeper pressure, which is where you rush for, but it seems like a blitz. That was just messing. Anytime Alabama went to empty, which is this, they should usually have a plan. No, they didn't have a plan for what Michigan was doing. And I think that's what it is you have to have a plan. These guys have 6 games under their belt, 12 games. They just took a final 2 weeks ago. They're not an NFL guy who's getting like several coaches breaking down this specific thing. And then they work out and study at it all the entire week. So I think that's what it is. It's just like that is just advanced 401 level stuff being in the Big Ten sometimes against these guys that are 2 stars with eight throws under their belt.
Yeah, and also, and I don't want to harp on this, but it is, you know, national championship game in a couple of days. I said this on Feinbaum yesterday, and it's something I came up with on the spot, but I want to expand on it here. Like, modern college football is so portal heavy that 15 years ago, Michigan's defensive end going against J.C. Latham, an IMG product, stud tackle, just declared for the draft yesterday. That's not going to be a fair fight, typically. You have to really hit on a local talent in the Midwest. And you'd have to develop and you have to give him the weight room, all that stuff. Tell you what you can do, go get the Coastal Carolina transfer, which is who backed him up into Milroe in that last snap. And that's what's interesting to me, is like, that's how the recruiting gap is closing.
Yeah.
We'll see it on Monday night. I'm intrigued to see it. First modern college football championship game. We'll go from there. All right, that's not what we're here to do.
Unbelievable point, though. That's so good, because the transfer portal is that's the edge. That's the money ball. Obviously, it's the equalizer. It's like, do it right. It's free agency. Get a pro scouting staff to start working and finding guys to fill your gaps.
I don't want FSU people to get mad at me, but FSU, I kind of think when you watch the Orange Bowl, it was by 60 points.
Yeah.
It shows you how surgical they were at using the portal to fill the gaps.
Yeah.
They did not. Mike Norvell did not recruit high school well enough the first, whatever, 3 or 4 years that he was there. And so they go out and they get Keon Coleman and Jared Verse, Brandon Fisk, and even Jordan Travis was a Louisville transfer, but obviously a different era because it was 4 years ago. But they went out and they said, we don't have the talent. Let's go get the talent.
Yeah.
And you can't, and you can do that by scouting Western Michigan and Albany and all of these different places. So it's the great equalizer, and it's changing. Two nuggets. We're in a good rabbit hole here. So I actually do want to stay on this. The two nuggets I have, I talked to someone over the summer, a person we all the name we would know, but I can't tell you who. And I said, what is the transfer portal changing? And they said, number one, kids don't get de-recruited anymore. So you used to go into Georgia and Alabama, and the first thing they would say is, you are a 5-star, you're the worst player on this team. You are the worst player. You're a pleb. And exactly. And you can't do that now.
No.
Because one of every 3 kids might say, about that, I'm going to Tennessee.
Yeah.
I really liked Shane Beamer. He was nice. I'm going to go to South Carolina now. That's just the way it is. So you used to be able to establish yourself as a coach who would take these prospects and de-recruit them. I'm not saying Saban and Kirby in particular. I have we're speaking in generalities.
It's a common thing.
It's just a thing that happens that they say is happening less than. Now, the other thing is that sometimes now draft prospects, they've noticed, come in asking a little more questions of kind of a what can you do for me thing.
Yep.
This is something I've heard, where maybe in the last 2 or 3 years, a guy who's transferred twice is used to sitting down and saying, how do you plan to use me, et cetera, what can you do for me, the opportunities. And the scouts and the coaches and the GMs kind of say, that's not really what this is. We're not going to like pitch you on this. Yeah. Now, you could, like Pete Carroll famously used to send pamphlets for undrafted free agents. That's pitching.
Yeah.
But they said they've noticed it. That a little bit. Now, on the flip side, one thing I think everybody loves is that quarterbacks now get to go to a system that they can thrive in.
Yes.
They can get the opportunities. Matt Castle would not have to be a project. He would have just gone and played at Cal. Well, I guess not then.
Somewhere back then. Say Arizona
in
State.
In theory. Arizona State. Wait, wow, Andrew Walters. Rudy Carpenter? But Matt Castle, after 3 years, would have said, okay, I'm going to go play at Texas A&M and just see how that goes. So it's changing literally everything about evaluation.
Yes. And also those quarterbacks that might have declared for the draft are now transferring. like a guy like our mutual quarterback, Tyler Van Dyke, our Eskimo quarterback. They beep that out. But no, with no, but I think that was so interesting too, is that there's so many of these guys, there's a big glut in the middle of prospects this year. Some of the guys we've already talked about were part of that, but a lot of day two-ish, early day three type guys that was far for the draft. And it feels like to me, a large majority of them are going back or transferring because either NIL or because, yeah, the transfer portal stuff. And I think that's actually pretty good. Or you get a guy like Cam Ward. Yeah, it does. It helps college and it helps and actually helps these guys get developed. I mean, Jane Daniels has now gotten 2 years at LSU and look at him now. I kind of like them at Arizona State. Okay, interesting day three guy. Penix as well gets another additional year. Of course, he has the injury stuff as well. But I think some of these guys benefit for everything you're saying is that they – are becoming smarter and understanding not only their value dollar wise, but their potential value and what can help them. It used to just be agents, you know, or you know, their buddy or the player that already went through the cycle or went through the draft or went through a transfer. And it used to be tough and you couldn't go to this conference or couldn't go to these schools. And some of those schools were the best schools that you could have gone to. So I think I absolutely what you're saying. I think it's, I don't know, for me as a neutral person that just does the draft and enjoys college football, it's like, all right, both products are kind of getting better if it goes right and also makes guys work. It sounds like to me, like everything you're just kind of shaping out, sounds like college coaches have to work. And I think they're going to like,
that's what the money's for.
Yes, exactly. We pay seven like, that's figures. Not,
everyone's like, oh, this is so probably, well, these coaches are going through it. Oh, cool. They're making $9 million.
That's like any coach out, that so, goes, so oh good. Man, they're getting after me. I'm like, yeah. And you can do the Woody Harrelson meme, wipe your tears away with money. It's like that. That's why they pay you seven figures or eight figures to do that.
Well, the other thing is somebody was saying this the other day because Kirby after the Orange Bowl said everybody needs to see what happened here. The Florida State had the opt-outs, it was an uncompetitive game. And somebody said, well, this is going to change things. Kirby's saying this. And I was like, let me tell you something. I've been around competition committee meetings. I've been around NFL owners meetings for over a decade. You know this more than anybody. No one who makes decisions cares what coaches think.
No.
Not one person. Nope. Not one person.
They think all they do is
look at the ratings. They're like, after the 2011 CBA, the coaches are ready to storm the league office over the practice rules. And they said, that sounds good, but we, you know, got this labor deal done because of it. So we'll take it easy. See you later, buddy.
There's not really, you ever hear about a coaches union too much. It's a players union and owners. Yeah. The coaches are the middlemen.
Coaches don't have much say. If you let, let me tell you something, a coach run league would be terrible.
It would be good. Short-sighted.
You do not want to see
it. It'd be patchworked. You don't want that. So short-sighted. You do not. My father is a coach. I used to be a coach. I have several uncles that are coaches. Yes, you do not want that.
I'm a longtime Madden coach, so I know we're kind of the same. All right, more with Nate Tice after this.
Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesar's Palace. All this can be yours when you bet with Caesar's Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns reward credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, use the code OMAHAFULL. And then place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great, you keep those winnings. But if you lose, you get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and up only, offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maine, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only. New users and first $10 wager only. Must wager with eligible promo code BET. Amount of qualifying wager return only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See Caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Hannah's, New Orleans. Maine, call 1-800-327-5050. or visit gamblinghelplinema.org. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-888-427-426-2537, or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, we're doing All Impressed Me Team.
I love this.
I want to just kind of shout out some guys, frankly.
Love
this. And I don't. We could take it anywhere we want. I have different kind of scenarios. I have one player, one GM, one coach.
I like that.
You can take it wherever you want to. The floor is yours. Your first All Impressed Me guy.
Yeah, and this is kind of a tag team champ, which is kind of fitting. It's the Cardinals offensive and defensive coordinators, Drew Petzing and Nick Rollins.
Oh!
Yes, a little tag team champ here. They are not highly rated in any statistical category.
Nope.
But they are up there in the fun meter. And I think they are building something in Arizona. I'm very interested to see what they do this offseason, because with spare parts and a whole bunch of nobodies and a little bit of half a season of Kyler Murray and a little bit of Buda Baker, you got some offenses. The offense under Petzing is doing the meta, I would say. They are on top of anything that is the edge in the NFL right now as far as run game and pass game. Mm-hmm. And I think Nick Rollins, their defensive coordinator, who's not even 30 yet, is a junk ball pitcher, because they had nothing but Buda Baker and how he would try. They're the team that brings the most simulated and creepers. They bring blitzes. They run every type of defense you could think of because they're trying stuff. And I've heard a lot of offensive coaches just go, yeah, it was a pain. We got them, but it was a pain. This game against the Eagles was kind of their magnum opus of the year. And I think it's fitting. That was not a mistake. But I just wanted to shout out those two, because I think those two are ones to watch. And I think the Cardinals are a team to watch pretty soon because they're doing some fun things.
Sure. So I love that. Let's start on the offensive side of the ball there with Drew Petzing. He comes from Stefanski's tree.
Yes.
He worked in Minnesota before he worked in Cleveland. He was a guy who, I think to us, I think we all know people in that coaching tree, and they were saying this guy's next up. And I'm curious, with Kyler playing a slightly different style than maybe some of the kind of Kubiak coaches or whatever you want to call it, you know, Stefanski's, by the way, been in a bunch of different offenses in Minnesota. That was one of the things that he was able to glean. I mean, obviously I think there was a few years ago, they declined his OC candidacy in New York. Did that happen?
Yeah, I think so. Or something like that. But it's technically a sidestep.
Not a promotion. But anyway, one of the good things was that he was exposed to a bunch of different offensive coaches by staying there in Minnesota. And so I'm curious, a guy like Drew Petzing, who came through Stefanski's wing, and then all the play action guys besides that, he's running what kind of style with Kyler?
Smorgasbord. But it is definitely, I will call it pro style, because it is a greatest hits offense. But I'll give you one stat to show you the difference. Over Kyler's first part of his career with Cliff Kingsbury as offensive play caller in Arizona, he was under center only, never under center more than 5% of the time. This past game against the Eagles, he was under center 40% of the time. And that is just one twist. And that sounds a little minor difference, but think of Kyler, think of what he was at Oklahoma, think of him as a pro. That is gun, spread it out and chuck it. they are using two tight ends. They are using a decent amount of motion, creative, and some creativity with it in the run game and pass game, but it's more of a two tight end set. And using that, Trey McBride and Kyler have a real chemistry. Michael Wilson, their young, their rookie receiver, has some moments. He had some bad moments too. He caused a pick six, but he also had a touchdown. But I would say they just run what's working right now, what I call the meta. Their run game is diverse, but they major in duo, which is an at-you run game. And then their pass game has play action, has drop back, has screens. It has all the stuff that's kind of working. And some of the bootleg stuff they do is the new twist that good offenses are doing. So it's I think if I had to give you one line after I just gave you a thousand of them, it's the good stuff. I think is that
they found the good place.
They found the good place, which is so fun. I mean it. And I don't want to make it that simple, but they are running the good place in 2023. What you should be running.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
I want to make one plea real quick because after Gannon and then before that with Dan Campbell, stop judging head coaching hires based on the demeanor of press conferences / social videos.
Even Sirianni. Yes.
Yeah. The only one this works for is the Gase Jets one.
Oh, what?
That was
and we had prior.
That was real bad.
We had
we had some
data priors, points. Yeah,
we had some tape on Gase. We had some tape. We had some reps.
We had six games on him.
Yeah. And so a nice little database. We had a file. We got to stop doing that because now at this point, here's a guy who I thought was funny. About the Gannon thing wasn't the Rondale Moore thing. It was that if you watch the full video, and I did, I think I was on paternity leave. What a sicko. Just hold on, Teddy. I'm watching the full Gannon cut. It was that you could tell if he liked a guy or not, I think, a little bit by how he hugged them, greeted them. Because there were a couple guys who I didn't know who came up to him and was like, oh, I'm so-and-so. And Gannon was like, oh, okay. And then kind of moved on. And I was like, I bet that guy's not going to make it. And then a couple months later, I looked.
They make the tape.
It was pretty one-to-one. So that was actually the funnier thing. But the Rondale Moore thing, he was just trying to connect with guy, and he's a little bit – not everybody is – not everybody's the coolest guy in the world.
No.
Just doing a little
– And again
– everybody's one bad hand mannerism away from becoming Michael Scott.
And I love the people that make fun of it. They would do better. But it's like that So I agree with that. I pushed back.
That happened to me. That happened to me with Justin Thomas, the golfer.
Oh.
I was introduced to him.
Okay.
And I was busy. I was doing a million different things at once.
Yeah.
And I was introduced to him at the Super Bowl. And I just started trying to make conversation. And I am a very good small talker, social situation.
You're fantastic. I can attest to that.
I just totally blanked with Thomas.
I've done that.
And I had nothing. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, all right, well, I golf. Well, yeah, he's a lot better than me. Oh, I play some nice courses. He plays nicer courses. I'm sitting there and I'm just like, I have nothing.
Do you remember when he won that one tournament?
Yeah. And so it was all going to be the Chris Farley show.
That's it.
Talking to him. So I was just like, how are you enjoying the Super Bowl, man? And he was like, oh, yeah, it's cool. So then by the grace of God, Ian Rappaport comes here. Ian Rappaport, golf sicko. He walks up and I say, oh, you two should know each other. And then they talk. And I'm sure Ian did a much better job than me. And I just left. I've never had that before or since. More famous people than Justin Thomas, more awkward situations. For some reason, I just looked at Justin Thomas and I became Dwight Schrute.
I've only had that. My only celebrity one would be Gene Hackman. But it almost came off good. It almost came off in a good way. A lot of people, I was at a team party. I was younger. I was in college, but my dad was with the Jaguars. So they have a holiday party every year. And Gene Hackman and his friends by some way, shape or form with Jack Del Rio from his USC days.
Uh-oh.
And he was at the party. Very nice guy. But a lot of those coaches, being of their age group are asking about Superman and asking about all these old movies and that he's been in. And I didn't say a word. I want to talk about Royal Tenenbaums, but I didn't say a word. Guess who Gene Hackman probably didn't say much to me, but kind of gravitated towards was I'm going to hang out with the 20-year-old kids not saying a word to me because he we said five words. I think he liked Vince Young. I think that was the one conversation we had. But it was that's my lack of small talk worked to my benefit because he was like, I'm not going to hang with those coaches that want to ask me 100 questions. I'm going to hang with the 20-year-old kid that probably doesn't know who I am. I did know who he were. But it was just that I just knew I had nothing to say to you. I had nothing to bring to the table. Hi, I'm a backup quarterback in college. Like, what am I going to say? Gene Hackman, are you kidding?
All right. I'm going to do my first one. Nick Caserio.
Okay.
So one of the reasons that, and all mine are vaguely famous, and Caserio being one of them, but all of them made me look stupid, which I think is the most important part of the impressive, all-impressive team. And the reason that I thought that Caserio made me look stupid, I think this was a lot of people. For me, it was, why is this team accelerating the timeline by trading up for three? I understand taking two, getting the best quarterback in the draft. Yeah. Great. By the way, there was a ton of smoke of that not being Stroud. Like, it was funny how that, like, one and two kind of regressed to the mean, where it was like, oh, it's going to be last two Julys ago. We were like, it's going to be Bryce Young and CJ Stroud. And then we went through a whole season, whole draft thing. Oh, it's going to be Will Levis. Oh, it's going to be this guy. And it's, oh, cool. It was the thing we thought.
My editor at The Athletic made fun of me. He goes, I feel like every quarterback check-in you've done has been the same. I go, that's all we got.
That's all we got. And I love, like, the mock drafts are like, Caleb Williams is going ninth. It's like, I promise you he's not.
I promise you he's not.
So Caserio accelerates his time with Will Anderson. He improved Tank Dell, obviously, and obviously CJ Stroud. But then he kind of professionalizes the roster. He goes out and he gets a bunch of different veterans. None of them were home runs. They still need a wide receiver one, and hopefully they'll be able to, I mean, we'll see what the franchise tag situation is, but hopefully go out and get a number one style receiver. They certainly have the cap room, but he went out and he got a bunch of professional football players, and all of a sudden they're winning really quickly. And the D'Amico Ryans hire was phenomenal. I think that there are guys who, and you know this, you ask around the league at who impresses them when you go up against them. And I think a lot of times coaches have a better view than players, because players could just have one good game or whatever, some technique. OCs hated going against D'Amico Ryans, hated it. And the one thing that always sticks in my mind is when I was doing that story on the Cincinnati, on how teams defend Cincinnati differently when they have to change their offense around, is the Bengals offensive coaches were like, they played, the Bengals played the Niners 2 years ago, and the Niners basically invented a Tampa 2 scheme on the fly. And they got out there and they were just like, what are we looking at right now? Because this is not the Niners defense. And they're like, what, that to install a new defense for Joe Burrow is pretty phenomenal. And so that had always stuck in my head. And then I still didn't see it coming. I still didn't see it coming that they were going to be this good this quickly. I just love what this Texans team has been able to do. And I think it shows you, I've said this before, but if you don't have a proof of concept by the end of year two on your build, a lot of times I don't think it's going to happen.
Right.
And maybe I'm being reductive or whatever, but like, to go out and this quickly in what amounts to year one, be this good. I just think it's a sign of a rebuild done right. And also, I think a lot of times we go, oh, what lessons can we take? Well, the lesson is to take CJ Stroud, but like, not everybody can do that.
Right.
It just shows you what's possible year over year.
Yeah. And even the defense, like, that still needs pieces. Like, they're outplaying what they are right now, which is again, a testament to him. I thought the Ryans game was the Cowboys playoff game from 2 years ago. Also, and I believe they played the Packers the week before. And and those two games, like you're saying, they invented kind of a weekly game plan. Like, truly, usually teams are carrying over a lot. And then this is why I always love Steve Spagnuolo, is he's one of the best week-to-week game players once playoff time comes. And that's what he's one of the best at. And it's funny, because usually his stuff is very much, I know what you're about to run, and we still can't beat it because they're so well coached. And that's the thing, is he can get to either, he can wear either hat, which is just so scary. So I love that one. I was going to say a shout out to CJ Stroud. I felt like that one was a little too easy, a little too shooting fish in the barrel, because he's freaking awesome. And
because we spent 2 weeks asking if he should be in MVP candidate.
It's unbelievable. Right. I also say the Will Anderson trade up, I also thought was rich, but might end up being okay, because this edge class, not only Will Anderson was my pick for defensive rookie of the year, but also this edge class coming up is not very strong at the top, and you can't really find a guy like Will Anderson. So it's like, all right, I can justify it a little bit more, especially, but now they have their star on offense, their star on defense. And I mean, it just looks good right now. So I'm excited to see what they do. All right.
Yep. All right. Who's your next guy?
Okay. So I have a couple ones here, but I'm going to go, instead of Stroud, I'm going to go Jordan Love for the Green Bay Packers.
Ooh, hell yeah.
Because I love the laser show he puts on every week. And I really like this Packers team and the baby cheeseheads and just the game, their game plan stuff as well is really good.
Yep.
But Love is what you want at quarterback right now. He's pushing the ball. He's changing arm angles. He's creating throws, creating throwing lanes, has athleticism to scramble and everything. He looks like a top 10 guy. He looks awesome. That offense is like a top five passing offense right now. So you said proof of concept. It's like, this is everything you wanted to hope as a Packers fan and probably everyone in that Packers organization, what they're seeing from Jordan Love in this offense.
Okay. So we get a LaFleur offense. It is a little bit of a hodgepodge because Rodgers loved the McCarthy concept and LaFleur was humble enough to say, sounds great, dude. Mm-hmm. And I think he earned a lot of respect in that Shanahan tree because he was open to that, to say, okay, these are the 10 best Mike McCarthy plays and Rodgers wants to run them and we're not going to put a square peg in a round hole. Having said that, that's no longer the case. The LaFleur offense is what, Nate?
Oh, boy. It is well coached. It is a play action heavy, a motion heavy, formation changing at the snap, kind of just grab bag offense. Again, another greatest hits types offense. That's what I've always liked about LaFleur. But I would say the best things about it is it's aggressive. It's very down the field, which it links up with their quarterback. And also just their man, like last week against the Vikings was clinic tape of how to handle Brian Flores' defense and just to all the blitzes that Flores brings. They got so creative with how they use protection. So really maybe the word is, or the phrase is, the one-liner, the how you sell this in an ad, the elevator pitch, is that it's sound and creative at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I think it's awesome. And I think it's so much more down the field and over the middle than Rodgers wanted to do at the end. Mm-hmm. And also just helps having so much more juice at the receiver position with some of these young guys. So it's aggressive, sound, creative, and fun.
I couldn't tell in the last year of Rodgers what was the thumb injury? What was him just missing deep throws? I mean, that was the thing that frustrated me so much at the beginning of the season, certainly, and I still get frustrated with it with LaFleur offense now, is like LaFleur's not afraid to take deep shots on really like fourth down.
Oh yeah, loves it.
Like fourth and
he's
two.
He's addicted to it.
He loves that stuff. Yes. And I'm always just like
trick plays, double passes. He loves it.
Get the two. Matt, get the 2 yards. He loves it. Come on, dude. Just get the fucking 2 yards. All right. I love that. Obviously, I'm a LaFleur stan. I think this is something I said this in my piece 2 years ago about him. Like, if it was easy to win back-to-back MVPs with Rodgers and win 13 games every single year, guess who would have done it? Mike McCarthy.
Yes.
He didn't do it. All right. So I'm going to shout out, and maybe this is like the cousin of the CJ Stroud shout out that's just so unbelievably obvious. Going through the stats, and I saw that Jordan Love was sixth in EPA per play involvement. I'm not really sure what that means. I think it means
dropbacks and design scrambles. Runs. Yeah,
Yeah. Wow. EPA connoisseur here. Thank God you're here. He's sixth. Eighth is someone with significantly less expectations than Jordan Love, even Baker Mayfield, who has solved everything. Like, he has saved his career.
I mean,
this is the trajectory of a bust.
He was a meme.
Okay. He was a meme, but the trajectory of a bust is get a good opportunity somewhere. Don't get that extension. Happens all the time. Go one place where they really want you. Carolina last year. Mm-hmm. Hey, we're going to give him a shot. Sam Darnold's there. We're going to give him a shot. Hopefully he can give us something, right? Yeah. And then there's one more team, and it's a team that's going, well, we don't have anybody else. And then they always fail there.
Yeah.
That stage, they always fail. Yeah. And then what happens next year? You go to camp with someone, you lose the job.
And that's it.
You're out of the league.
That's it.
And that's it. And then the next thing you do is you start tweeting about quarterback play. Like 6 months later, and you try to get on a headset. That's it. That's the life cycle of a modern quarterback.
It is.
And Baker Mayfield got to the stage where we said, okay, it's over. And he said, what if I played lights out?
Yeah.
What if I was one of the most productive quarterbacks in football? And this is important. Ian Rappaport had that nugget a couple weeks ago that basically, like, he's Mr. Humble now. And I think it's really hard for that to be an act. I think it's more like football took a lot out of him.
Yeah.
And he came in as a first overall pick, very cocky guy, which works for some guys. But when you get beaten down by football, and it has over the past couple of years, he's had a couple of off-field things. I'm not really sure what happened with the finances with the family stuff, I'm sure is just, again, it's one of those things where, like, could you imagine having to file financial stuff? Where's my money? That's not good to your family.
The Culkin,
the Culkin. Happened to Billy Bean. It's in Moneyball. They said Billy Bean. They took his.
His parents did.
They took his signing bonus.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. So big little Baker Mayfield, little second act as a forward thinking baseball GM.
Yeah.
So anyway, the way he's been able to change the entire narrative.
Oh yeah.
Is really incredible.
Yep.
The most impressive thing for you about Baker Mayfield has been what?
Oh man, it's getting back into. What their offense does is just spreading it and shredding it. And I think Baker in Cleveland, they wanted to be more, Nick Chubb heavy and a lot more play action stuff, turning back to the defense. And now, remember Baker at Oklahoma was an air raid quarterback. And watching him now, I think they've done Dave Canales, their offensive coordinator there in Tampa Bay. This is the most he's ever truly dropped back. So no play action, no screens. This is the most he's ever done at the highest rate he's ever done it as a professional. And I think this is the best he's looked as a drop back passer, probably since that little rookie year, 6 weeks of just like, oh, Baker's going to work because he gets to sit there. He gets to get some space and he gets to rip it. And that's what he wants to do. He wants to push the ball. And then he's got some awesome receivers that, Mike Evans played fantastic this year. And Chris Godwin, I think they got play from other guys, Trey Palmer, Cade Otton, Rashad White's a great receiving back. The offensive line is good tackles. Interior's a little iffy. That's why the run game's not great, but it's like, this is fun. And like that eighth rating that you dropped the EPA per drop back, that's kind of how it feels. This doesn't feel too fluky. It feels very boom or bust, but that's kind of how Baker does feel overall. So maybe this offense reflects Baker perfectly and maybe that career arc. I was going to say, Baker went to Tampa, but not to cover a USF game. He was not
to cover USF.
No, he was not going to Raymond James.
Thursday night.
Nope. No Thursday night.
USF. I honestly don't even know who's in that
conference. I was just about to say,
it's not Cincinnati.
I almost said Cincinnati. So I'll go Tulsa.
I'm sure Tulsa's in there. Yeah. I went to a USF West Virginia game to talk to Geno Smith.
Oh, very fun. Yeah, very fun
for the local paper. All right. That was my only time at a USF game.
Okay.
No, I never went to any of the Miami USF games. Miami lost to USF and got Randy Shannon fired, which I thought was going to be a blessing in disguise, and it just wasn't. And
was that 2010? Teddy Bridgewater
decommitted. Yeah, Teddy Bridgewater decommitted after they fired Randy, and then he got Al Golden. So tough one.
That is tough one.
All right.
I have good memories of
your next guy.
I got a few. Oh yeah, nothing but wins there. Plenty of them. I got a couple because I know we don't want to go get too many in here. But I was just gonna say young defensive slot players. That's a thing.
Ooh.
There are 9 first or second year defenders that played or first or second year DBs that played 400 or more snaps in the slot. There's 14 that played 300 or more snaps in the slot. Kyle Hamilton, Brian Branch, Deion Witherspoon, Kyler Gordon, Trent McDuffie, D. Alford, Alante Taylor, Roger McCreer, Kader Kohu, Jaquan McMillan, Christian Eisen, all players that are kind of notable for their defenses. Hamilton has been one of the stars of the season. Could have just made this whole category him. Brian Branch made the Pro Bowl. Deion Witherspoon made the Pro Bowl. Branch, though, had an impact moment week one, Chiefs onwards. But now I thought it was awesome. The All-Pro, the AP announced that they're going to add the slot position to their All-Pro team. And I think that's justified because of guys like this that are used to just be a 5'9", 180-pound slot guy is now kind of becoming this these versatile guys, these safeties, these maybe undersized linebackers, these corners, these big corners that couldn't stick it on the outside. They get to affect the game and be these kind of Swiss Army knives. So I want to shout out all these guys because this is a new wave and it reflects what's happened in college the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years. Mm-hmm. And now we're just seeing it now in the NFL as more defenses look like that in the NFL.
Quickly on this one, Kyle Hamilton does what to that Ravens defense?
Unlocks it. And that is, he opens that whole thing up. Hey man, Roquan Smith. But Kyle Hamilton's versatility, he could line up at the line of scrimmage as a linebacker in the slot, as a deep safety, and truly be a plus player, truly be a good winning player at all those spots as opposed to just lining up there for fun. So he unlocks the whole thing because his versatility, being able to guard a receiver on one snap, blitz, do all those things, lets them have their kind of kaleidoscopic defensive scheme that they want to do.
I said this on the pod with Deontay Lee when he came on a couple weeks ago, but I am now fully linebacker and safety pilled.
Yes.
I'm fully middle of the field pilled.
Yes. Spine.
My whole thing, all I wanted to do was have defensive linemen over and over. That's all I would do is draft defensive mm-hmm. linemen on day one and day two, and then just figure the rest out later. And now I'm like, actually, give me linebacker.
Spine.
Everybody but corner wide receivers. There's like those you can
four linebackers right now. It's a thing. I know. So it's like, get them. Just get all of them. Just get them if you can. No, I think watch what Jesse Bates has done leaving the Bengals defense and now going to the Falcons defense. Bengals defense is one of the worst in the league this year. They've had moments in the red zone, and the Falcons defense is one of the most improved in the entire NFL. And Bates is probably the big reason because of that, because it's just what he does on the back end.
Jesse Bates is awesome.
Awesome. Awesome.
I know the Bengals knew that, but they just didn't have the money, and they didn't want to have the money. And then
they did have a plan,
had a plan.
Yeah.
They replaced him.
Yeah.
They replaced him. And listen, if Joe Burrow is healthy, we might be having a completely different conversation about this. We might say, well, they were able to get over the loss of Jesse Bates. Like, I really do believe if he was healthy, never had the calf injury, the Bengals would win the Super Bowl. Like, I feel like that roster, that coaching staff, we're going to look back on this moment in time.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
Well, I mean, I just remember, and I've told the story before, like, when I was in Cincinnati 2 years ago, doing the whole thing on Burrow, and somebody turned off my tape recorder and said, you don't, like, this is a special group of offensive players, and we're going to look back on this and be like, holy crap, in 10 years, and be like, Chase and Higgins and Boyd were on those contracts on this team, and like, that was, you know, like, anyway, another day.
It's like,
and Joe Burrow.
Yeah, and Joe Burrow. Yeah, and him. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to shout out, this is a results oriented business. I don't want to get in trouble with the NFLPA. Sean Payton being 8-8 going into week 18 is one of the best in season turnarounds I've ever seen, and best year over year. Like, that was a joke team last year.
Yeah.
And then they start September and they're still a joke team. And I think that, I mean, and a lot of times in this era, you've coached in it. But I remember when I was doing the Ringer NFL show with Robert Mays, I'd said defense was crappy. And somebody, a GM, called me. And he said, I thought he was being mad at me, kind of was. But then he said, the thing you need to understand is, in modern defense, if you're putting something together on the fly, this is not 1996 anymore. There are defenses that will start awful in September and by November will click. And it might just be like kind of what you're talking about. One player unlocks the defense on the back end, one pass rusher we're giving more reps to, and all of a sudden he's in the backfield every play and it's changing. You know, so there's just a quick little scheme thing.
Yep.
And I've always thought about that. The evolution of defense in the middle of the season is probably, I would guess, and you know ball far more than me, significantly more than the offense, unless there's injuries. The defense evolves totally.
It's the units that are greater than the sum of their parts, and that's offensive line and defense. Those are the ones that need time because they need communication. They need to get on the same page, especially all these defenses.
They practice contact.
Yes,
in a lot of cases.
Oh yeah, that as well. Tackling and blocking. Yes, the most fundamental stuff as possible, and also just. You got to figure out the right pieces. This guy goes here. I would always look, and I think Steve Spagnuolo is usually the guy to always look at as pre-bye week and post-bye week. Because the bye week is the big reset button, especially for the good staffs. They self-scout. They get some time, take a deep breath. They go, okay, every time this guy is at the slot, we suck. All right, get him out of here. Mm-hmm. Look at what the 49ers did. They signed Isaiah Oliver, who I liked. He was in the slot, kind of wasn't, all right, are we good there? Okay. So they bumped Demondador Lenore back into the slot, and that's really helped the whole defense and Chase Young following their bye week. But different offenses, different defenses do that. So I think that's exactly it. Sean, I mean, the offense is wonky, but I've called this team a jiu-jitsu team. They just get you on the ground, they grind it out, and all of a sudden they win. And they get you in like a finger hold, toe hold.
And so the reason I after they lost, I think it was after the 70-point game, I said, Sean Payton doesn't seem into this. This team seems much further away than I anticipated. Agreed. And I said on this show, I said, this whole thing is over unless they get a top two pick. This whole thing is over. I literally counted them out, which I never do. But you wouldn't have a proof of concept. Giving up 70 points is a proof of some sort of concept. Yeah. And so I looked at it and I just said, this is on the wrong track and it's not getting on the right track. And so for them to be able, obviously, I'm going to shout out Vance Joseph here, who orchestrated it, who was able to pressure, get the pressures where they needed to be. That's a remarkable in-season turnaround. To get this team to 8 wins after Hackett, I mean, Hackett really was probably the worst coach I've ever seen.
It was just the worst environment I've seen, just as far as coaching, quarterback play, just everything going on there.
And people were like, well, some people were like, well, he hired his buddy from college and that he was like, his buddy from college was the strategy guy, right? Like, and that's what's got unraveled. And I'm just like, okay, well, you know what? Don't do that. Don't hire your buddy from college to be the strategy guy. Don't do that. And so I just think that there's them being at this stage in their rebuild shows me, and this is what impresses me, shows me that Peyton is into this, that he's building something. Is it going to be a team that catches the Chiefs? Probably not anytime soon. But they'll fix the quarterback thing. They're going to have to take their medicine with the Russell Wilson contract. But I also think, like, I'm surprised. I think it's a little slimy what they did to Wilson. I'm not surprised they did it. I actually said it in September, late September. And I think, I'm sure I wasn't the only one where it's like, he has his injury guarantees. At some point, they're going to sit him. I didn't think they were going to say, hey, waive your injury guarantees or we're going to bench you. That's a little slimy to me. I think one day you just say, okay, you're not playing anymore. And everybody will get it. They'll have to take their medicine on the cap. But I don't think that this is no longer a doomed project, which is it's like an arrested development. We're now don't buy instead of sell on the stock. I think that's important.
I think when they paid him what they paid him, they were saying you have rank here. And that's why it was interesting to me that I was like, oh man, he's going to have some pride in this. And they spent free agency. I was like, oh, they're moving up for guys in the draft. I was like, all right, he's into this. They're pushing it. And then, like you said, the first 6 weeks happened. I picked him as my dark horse for coach of the year. And I had them as the seventh seed in the playoffs. And how they started the season, I was like, boy, do I look dumb. And I'm watching them on tape. I'm like, oh man, I don't know, guys, this defense can't guard anybody. I love Surtain. He's one of the best players in the league, but the rest of this is rough. And they have players too. Guys have a lot of pride. And I think they, of course, had a lot of pride on defense. I also think Sean Payton also got that kind of competitive itch again. And he was like, really? He was like, oh, okay, actually, I do like this. I do want to get part of this. I do want to do all this. And I'm curious. They're one of the most fascinating teams this offseason because of, obviously, the Russell Wilson stuff, but also the pivot points they could take. Because I don't think Sean Payton wants to do like a whole rebuild thing. So how aggressive are they getting to find a quarterback? It's going to be really interesting because they could be, a sneaky – I wouldn't say a sneaky team, but a very interesting team this offseason, a very active team this offseason.
Also, Sean Payton's good with quarterbacks. I don't think anybody's forgotten. He turned Taysom Hill into someone.
And then paid him.
And then paid him. That was the original sin. Not to spoil anything if you're doing this with Mays, but who is your coach of the year?
Oh, I just wrote about it. Sean McVay.
Oh.
And which is also a transition into my next one, which is Sean McVay, Les Snead, and the entire Rams organization.
I love this.
Just everything they did, nailing draft picks, non-first rounders. I mean, top down, Byron Young. I mean, a bunch of guys, Kobe Turner are enough for a draft haul. And on top of it, they got a starting guard. That's fantastic. Steve Avila. I mean, they just done so much good stuff. Development of undrafted free agents. Michael Hoyt has been one of my favorite kind of like those guys of the season, just this former Ivy League Canadian guy, has undrafted free agent, has slowly developed. He's dropping into coverage at 310 pounds. He's getting after the passer. They are, again, another team that's on defense. They got rid of Jalen Ramsey, but they found a kind of greater than the sum of their parts kind of thing. Okay, we're not going to be amazing, but we're going to make it hard, at least on offenses. And then what this whole offense did, I mean, they revamped the whole offensive line. They moved guys around. They benched guys. They leaned into Kyron Williams. They said, no, this guy's something. Matthew Stafford has been playing on frickin' fire this entire year. And then Puka Nacua's, I was my offensive rookie of the year going into this week because of just what he's doing statistically and what he's doing on the field. I think he's legitimately good. People are kind of just cropping him. I was like, oh, he's a fan, really good for fantasy. He's a nice story. Fifth rounder. It's he's legit freaking good. He's an awesome blocker, great receiver, great runner. Cooper Kupp was hurt for some of this year, a good chunk of this year, and they still were clicking on offense. I just think everything this team did, especially what they looked like last year when they kind of just went, oh, yeah, we're going to sign Bobby Wagner and Allen Robinson, whatever.
Yeah.
Run it back. And then now this offensive identity change they've had, this what they're doing on defense with Raheem Morris as well. He should get a shout out. Bringing in Mike LaFleur, offensive coordinator, mm-hmm. just they really looked at themselves. They really just were like, hey, we got to change this. That's a lot of work to do and a lot of self-confidence to have that. And from week one onwards against Seattle, they looked the part and now they're in the playoffs. And so they have to get a shout out because they've been awesome this entire year.
So I think because McVay's original miracle was 7 years ago now,
wow,
that we've forgotten that he is a miracle worker.
The guy.
Like nobody, I really think that, and I know this, like, I'm so tired of people being like, nobody's talking about this, but like Jared Goff stunk. He really stunk under Jeff Fisher.
It's terrible.
He was like as bad. I haven't checked the Bryce Young numbers, but I think he was the second worst rookie. Goff was the second worst rookie.
It's always like him, Rosen. And like, yeah,
Alex Smith.
Alex Smith was bad.
For a while. Yeah. And then Andrew Walters, actually, I swear to God, was in the mix.
Oh, and I'm not joking. What's his name? Gabbert. Gabbert. Gabbert had some.
Yeah, I think Gabbert was closer to the middle than those fellas. There's some grim ass numbers.
Yeah.
I had Alex Smith on the show a couple years ago, and he was like, took me like years to get over my first start. Sometimes you get drafted in bad environments, yes, and bad things happen. So McVay is a miracle worker, and then he works a miracle and everybody goes, whoa, check out McVay, right? This is what he does.
Yeah, this is exactly what he does. Or even when they traded for Stafford, everyone's like, I don't know, why would you do that to run like that offense and everything? It's like, yeah, he changed that entire offense because he gets it. He understands what he has. It's like, some of these guys just get it and they just understand personnel and are confident. I don't know. They've taken me by so surprise. Their win total going into the year was 6.5. Their dead cap was the second highest in the league. It's this team just looked like, whatever, shrugged shoulders year. Let's see what we got with some of these young guys. Well, they got good things with the young guys and some of the old guys, Stafford, Kupp a little bit. Kupp's always older than you think. Aaron Donald are still awesome. So yeah, shout out to them. Because that takes a lot to do that. And the fact that it has results is awesome.
Beautiful. Yeah. Nate Tice, all impressive team. I love this. Enjoy life with your boy. We'll be texting about it.
You as well.
Athletic Football Show, Yahoo Sports column, must read, must listen. See you, buddy.
Thanks. Thank you so much.